Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital. Today, we get the pleasure of meeting Laura Whitaker. Laura is the executive director of ESP, Extra Special People, which is located just outside of Athens, Georgia. ESP exists to create transformative experience for people with disabilities and their families, changing communities for the better. Well, I love that. It fits into the whole discussion of Common Good, which obviously is our name. In addition, Laura is co-founder of Java Joy. I want to hear more about that. So welcome, and really fascinated to hear more about your story.
Super excited to be here. Thank you, Jeff.
Why don't we start? Where are you located right now? And then something big is happening outside your office. Maybe you could start there.
That's right. So we are located a little outside of Athens, Georgia, just about an hour from Atlanta. And I am sitting here in my office. And when you look outside of my window, you see a long line of people. And these are people that we serve here at ESP. I'm the executive director here, and we serve children and young adults with developmental disabilities and their families. They are in line right now to get the COVID Pfizer vaccine. And what is so special about this is that today is the first day that our governor has opened it up for people with developmental disabilities and their caregivers. And I'll tell you what, there are a lot of smiles and a lot of tears happening over here, a little sense of normalcy, and definitely a sense of hope happening around here. So we've got sunflowers, and our whole theme is Here Comes the Sun 2021. So just looking towards the future and the hope and summer camp and all good things in this new season of life. We'll vaccinate about 400 people in the span of 4 hours. So it's pretty remarkable to see the operation happening over here.
Well, that is awesome. And it's great to see normalcy coming back. And so hopefully this is the start of it for you and what you all do. You can't help but read your bio and learn a little bit about you. And you clearly have this deep passion for the families and then, of course, those with the disabilities that you serve. Maybe what you could do is give us a little background on yourself and maybe even weave into there how that passion became so real for you. So, you know, where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And then just a high level of your career.
Mm-hmm. I'm an Atlanta girl, and I came down the Highway 316 to Athens, Georgia to become a Bulldog. I was super excited to come to the University of Georgia. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. I thought I wanted to be a special education teacher. And the way that I kind of fell into working with people with developmental disabilities is, you know, my family served a lot. We volunteered. It's kind of what we did as a family. So I watched my parents serve on boards. I watched my family give a portion of our income to local organizations. So that really is woven into the fabric of who I am. But I also kind of fell into working with people with disabilities. I did an internship program and ended up in a special education classroom. And the teacher was pregnant and ended up passing the gavel over to a 16-year-old and said, "Hey,
oh, wow,
you're better than a substitute. You know these kids." And sitting on the floor and the carpet, working on colors and shapes and wiping slobber and changing diapers. It was in those moments, those real human moments, that I really saw the love of Jesus and people who couldn't advocate for themselves. And it was addicting to me. I mean, they brought me more joy than anything else I was doing as a regular 16-year-old. And I knew I had to have more of it. So came to the University of Georgia, thought I wanted to be a teacher. Turns out I probably would have been a terrible teacher. I always say sometimes you choose your job and other times it chooses you. The job actually did choose me. I started volunteering here at ESP as an 18-year-old, fell in love with this place. Kids of all abilities walk or roll through the doors and they're treated not for their disability, but for their abilities. Their disabilities kind of melt away and they are treated for who they are. Started working at summer camp, and our founder was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer and passed away a couple months later. And so as a 19-year-old, I was taking finals and got the phone call, "Would you take over camp for next summer?" Mm. And so I did what every stupid 19-year-old would do. I said yes, because 19-year-olds think that they can do anything. Mm-hmm. It was the best, most stupid decision that I've ever made. And now they can't get rid of me. And so here I am, you know, 16 years later, and our organization has grown 100-fold, and it's been the greatest joy of my life as a mom of 3 children and a wife to now be a part of something so special that it truly is changing communities for the better.
Take me back to you were 19. When did you then know that you were going to be the executive director from a long-term perspective? And then secondarily to that is, how do you view the world differently today versus 19?
You know, when I was 19, one of the beauties of being so young is that I didn't know what I didn't know, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that I didn't know how to run a nonprofit organization and raise hundreds of thousands of dollars and plan volunteer programs and take care of seizures and G-tubes and tracheotomies. I didn't know any of that when I was 19, but I felt very called and very pushed to say yes, and I didn't know why. And I think very similarly, you know, we have done some crazy things over the years. I mean, we launched a hug business amidst a global pandemic. We continue to do crazy things. And I think what it taught me as a 19-year-old was to kind of take out the world standards of what's important and not listen to the noise that's around me and do what's best for the organization and the community as a whole. And so when I was 19, I didn't know I'd be there for 16 years. Mm-hmm. But I knew it was the next best thing. It was the next right thing to do was to say yes. And then I just kind of built this rhythm of doing the next right thing. And it's absolutely changed the course of my career, my leadership, the humility I had when I was 19. I try to remain, even today, 16 years later, to surround myself with people that are better, smarter, wiser than I am to help me do these crazy things that we're doing over here at ESB.
So you've been at this for 16 years, maybe getting a little bit ahead of myself. So let's say you're kind of halfway through your working career, something like that. How would you best describe yourself in the context of where you are at in your life journey?
So just to paint a picture, you know, I'm an executive director of a fast growing organization. I'm a mom of 3 and a wife. We also have a 35-year-old with Down syndrome that lives with us. So we have a bonus child. And so I would say that life is very full, but it's expanding. I always kind of look at it like a belt, and I'm putting more loops in my belt, right? It's full. There doesn't seem to be room, but somehow the belt expands and we fit more into it. You know, really where I'm at is I have seen something magical happen in this community through our organization. And I'm ready for other communities to experience this. I'm ready for other families, other children to experience the magic of ESB. But more than that, one of the most fascinating parts of my job is watching people without disabilities see the need for people with disabilities. Mm-hmm. It's philanthropists, it's volunteers, it's investors, it's board members, it's community members, it's committee members. It's all those typical people who think they have their life fit together. Mm-hmm. And then they come to ESP and they realize, oh my gosh, everything I've done for the last 30 years has brought me to this very moment to give back something bigger than myself. And that has been the greatest joy of my career. So now, just as I'm addicted to serving kids with developmental disabilities, I think I'm even more addicted to watching people fall in love with caring for people with developmental disabilities and caring for their community. And so I'm in this space now where I want to shout it from the rooftops that what we have here is so special. What we have at Java Joy is so special, and every community in every corner of the world deserves to have an ESB.
One, I want to hear what Java Joy is, which I'm figuring I have a sense just based on kind of the name and then what you do. Well, let's just start there. So Explain what that is.
So Java Joy, well, it's important to know how it came about. We did a large capital campaign. It was right on the heels of the recession. We launched it in 2011. I said, I want to raise $3 million in 3 years. And people in our community individually sat me down. I had 15 different meetings of people that said, you can't raise $3 million in 3 years in this town. And I said, well, if we raise $100,000, we'll serve more kids on our waiting list. If we raise $500,000, serve more kids on our waiting list. So needless to say, in 3 years, we ended up not raising $3 million. We raised $4 million. built a beautiful building that, you know, one of our parents said, they don't build beautiful things for people with disabilities. I knew we were going to get a new building. I didn't realize it was going to be so beautiful. And I said, well, we do. It was like Extreme Home Makeover. We had people donate granite. We had people donate the curb and gutter. And we had all, it was beautiful to watch the community come together. So I'm standing in our teaching kitchen, and I'm watching all these corporations, for-profit corporations, come in and out of our building. And I kept hearing a common theme from these business owners. And it was this: they kept telling me in their own way that they loved sending their employees to ESP because their employees would come back to the office not only more proud to be a part of the business that they worked for, but they came back more joyful and they came back more productive. And, you know, that's social responsibility right there. You know, that's the key to it. That's one of the reasons why it's so important for businesses to think about their communities, is that it affects culture and it affects the bottom line. And so I'm watching all of this happen, and it's back in 2016. And I said, you know, not every business can come to us. What if we can go to every business? Mm-hmm. What if we can take people with disabilities to places and spaces around people who don't typically have experiences with people with disabilities? They wouldn't walk in our door because they would feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And I always say that awkward is the very beginning of aha, because people have to be made a little bit awkward to realize or experience something new and thus change their mind about something. And so we started this little coffee cart. It was a janitor cart. We also know that 86% of adults who want and can work that have disabilities are unemployed. So 86% unemployment rate for adults with disabilities. So I said, okay, let's marry these two things. Let's look at a corporate social responsibility model. Let's go into businesses and let's employ adults with disabilities. And we did just that. We named it Java Joy after the joy that these corporations were experiencing. We hired what we called Joyristas.
That's awesome.
Not a barista, but a Joyrista. And yeah, we set off, and I'll never forget, we were at a large bank. The very first, we did a Kickstarter campaign. We raised the 15 grand that we needed. We're at this bank for a Christmas party, our very first event. The Joyristas are giving out hugs. This was pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Smiles and joys, and the line kept growing. And people kept, these business owners kept giving me their card. Like, when can I book Java Joy? When can I book Java Joy? And I knew in that moment, there was something really, really remarkable, not only for the community of people with disabilities, but for businesses all over the country. And that's where it started. And it's grown since then.
I'm assuming that all the profits go back into your organization?
That's right. So it is a nonprofit. Every booking goes back in to help train and hire more Joyristas. And they do all types of trainings and social groups and things like that, so that we can provide not just a job, but a life that's worth living for adults with disabilities. And that's what it goes to.
Does that Java Joy, does it support itself, or do you now need capital going to continue to support it?
So eventually it will support itself.
Okay.
So we have four Java Joys now, one here in Athens, Georgia. We've got one in Atlanta, one in Rome, Georgia. And then crazy enough, we have one in San Francisco, California, which is a crazy story within itself. Essentially, a venture capitalist experienced Java Joy in Atlanta. He went back to San Francisco. He typically invests in for-profit tech companies. Could not get Java Joy off of his mind. Had never done anything philanthropic in his life. He said that one hug is all it took. And it was the hug that he didn't know that he needed. So he flew back here and decided to put a Java Joy in San Francisco. So yeah, eventually, after about 2 years, the cart is self-sustaining, but it takes individual contributions, corporate contributions, things like that in order to get it there to year two.
So outwardly, we've gotten a sense of what you do and what you're passionate about. How would you describe to yourself in your own head how you're trying to change the world?
I think the beautiful thing about ESP is that when someone walks through the door, we have figured out whether they have a disability or whether they don't, whether they have $1 billion or whether they don't, regardless of what background it is, we have figured out how to look at that person and see their abilities, see who they were created to be. And I think I think that's the way that we are changing the world. That's the way that I am changing the world, is really challenging that thought of difference and that thought of disability, and really focusing on the ability and what God created each of us to do to contribute for the greater good. And my hope is that through our work that we can dream big for the benefit of others. I think it's been so much fun in my life. It's changed my family's life. It's changed my friends' lives. It's changed everybody that I'm around to be able to dream big for the benefit of others. And I hope to change the world by sharing that and allowing other people, giving people the opportunity to do big things for the benefit of other people.
I may want to cut this comment out, but it's interesting. So I've talked to, and I can't tell you why that I've done this, but I've talked to my kids and my wife, and I've said, what if we saw above everybody's head some type of a measurement of, like, if their potential is whatever is 10, and we see where everybody is functioning relative to that, it would change the paradigm, because we'd all see, or some way to measure, like, we all have our own weaknesses. We all have our own challenges, and some are more visible than others. But it's interesting the way you attack this, because it really is a humility of, look, we're all broken, and we all were created for a purpose, and we all long to reach that potential. And so what you're doing with, I'm assuming, a population group that is probably viewed more, I mean, just viewed for the negative side of it. And you go, no, there's a whole nother side that this individual or person is created for, and their contribution to the common good.
Absolutely. And I mean, leave this or not, but I, in response to that, so I'll never forget, I mean, 3 years in as executive director, and by the way, I called myself camp director because I couldn't deal with the title of executive director.
Oh, right.
19 years old. I'll never forget. I was at the pool. We had an emergency, had to take one of our kids to the hospital. I'm in an ambulance with this kid who's bleeding, and I get to the hospital and his dad is there, and I knew he had a single dad, but I wasn't sure what the whole family story was. And this kid was 18 years old, has an intellectual disability. And I'm watching his dad cradle him in hospital, holding him, singing Jesus Loves Me. And I looked at him and I said, what is your story? You know, tell me your story. And the short version of it is, he was an alcoholic, workaholic. The reason that he kind of turned on his family is that when Caleb was born, he was told that there was hidden sin in his family and that something was wrong with him, something was wrong with their family. And so he just kind of went the other way. And he said he was on a business trip and kind of was at the low of all lows, and opened the drawer and picked up the hospital bed Bible and opened it up to John 9. And it's the story of Jesus and the man who was born blind. And the disciples say, who Jesus sinned, him or his parents, that this man was born blind? And Jesus said, neither. He was born blind so that all of you could see me. And then he healed him. And so he uses this man who was born blind, who in their culture, all they saw was blindness and sin. And yet Jesus does take that much higher view and sees this man and uses a blind man to help people to see him, you know, which I just think is so amazing about Jesus, is he uses a blind man for others to see. But just that idea of, like, we get so fixated on what we can see and what we see and what we feel. And I do think, like, the gift that I have around here and that we have around here is that we're able to kind of elevate from that view of what people typically see and really see people for the way that God sees them. And I think that's the challenge and that's the beauty. And it's a huge honor and a big responsibility, but really such an amazing joy.
All right, I'm going to switch the discussion here.
Yeah.
And that's to talk about money or capital. Obviously, to do what you do, you will have to raise capital in whatever form or fashion you do. So when did you realize the power of capital, and or what does that mean when I even ask you that question?
Yeah, that's a funny question, because people imagine whatever their experience is with nonprofits, and they have their own idea of what that's like. And I'll never forget trying to raise money for this new building and realizing that the more we raised, the more we raised, right? That money was attractive to money, and people who had money were attracted to other people who had money. And I suddenly started realizing that in nonprofits, we don't like to talk about money because we are, quote, nonprofits. But I love talking about it because you know what? It's oxygen for us. Mm-hmm. If I have the funding to be able to scale like what we want to do right now, I keep saying, you know, I need Jeff Bezos or whoever to drop me $5 million so I can put a ESP in every corner of this state or throughout the country. And I could do that, but I need capital to be able to do that. I need human capital. In order to get human capital, I need financial capital. And so oftentimes people in nonprofit don't like talking about that, but I love it because the more I have, the more oxygen I have to be able to hire better people, retain better people, have better cultures, which means I get to serve more people. And I really saw that through raising money for this building. It was a beautiful process of watching people contribute. And it wasn't for the tax write-off, right? We know that people don't just give for the tax write-off. People give because they feel called to give. They see that they have something that can benefit their community. So I noticed that and recognized that right off the bat. And since then, it's been a joy to watch people that have the means to be able to give come here and realize, oh, I thought they needed me, but actually I need them. And that's been really, really fun to watch as we've grown.
So it's interesting in the impact investing world, so where you're actually investing to make money and do good, I view it as, and this is the same thing for you in your world, is I view impact investing as a coin. And on one side of the coin is everybody wants capital going to certain causes or themes because it has a huge impact. And that's when you talk about impact investing, that's generally the narrative. I actually am intrigued by the other side of the coin, and that is what that does to the heart and psyche of the investor. And it's what you just said. And so I would encourage you and just remind you as an executive director, yeah, it's easy to focus on you need this capital for this building. And yeah, you're asking people, but what people will get in return is this joy and freedom and or fill some void. And so don't be afraid to keep asking, because that's an important part of people's journey, as well as them experiencing, getting the opportunity to experience that joy and freedom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so good because it's so true. You know, I see so many people, they've got the mountain house and the beach house and the convertible and the car and their kids have plenty of money, and it's, you know, and then what, right? And then what? And then they come here and they realize like, oh my gosh, this is what I've been looking for this entire time. I didn't need another car. I didn't need another house. I really just needed to be able to serve and to give and to use the skill sets that I've been given and the abilities that I've been given to give back. And that is better than any beach house. It fills a void that many of us need, that I think we all need.
So how would you think about stewardship? Obviously, as executive director, there's your steward of all the capital, your stewards for all the individuals that you serve. So I'd just be curious, enlighten us, when I say the word stewardship, what does that mean to you?
Stewardship to me really is about management and responsibility, whether it's funds or whether it's an organization. For me, stewardship is I you know, have the opportunity to collect funds from people who choose to invest in us and then steward those funds to make a difference in the lives of people in our community. I think as a leader, take the COVID example, we very quickly flipped our mission model. We didn't shut our doors. And the stewardship of the organization was making a decision. There was risk not to do anything, and there was risk to do something. Mm-hmm. And so as a steward of the organization, it's my job to zoom out and say, what's the bigger risk and how should we move forward? And we knew that if we didn't open our doors, there was going to be more abuse, and there was. We knew there were going to be hungry families, and there were. We knew there were people that needed emergency respite, and there were. And so as a steward of the organization, as a leader of the organization, I've got to figure out how to take those funds and those resources and best utilize them for the most important person in the room and that's the organization as a whole. To me, that is what stewardship is, regardless of what resource you're stewarding.
One of the questions I probably should have asked you earlier, but so we're going to ask it now, is give us a little vision of what you all do at ESP. I mean, I think we've got a sense of it, but...
So ESP fulfills our mission in three different ways. One, 360 is our after-school program, summer camp program, and family support. So every family can receive free counseling and free support here at ESP through 360. It's our wraparound program where every kid gets to experience the magic of what we do. So kids with autism get to do theater. Kids with Down syndrome get to do dance. You name it, what a typical kid, what your kids, my kids get to experience, kids with disabilities get to experience because of 360. The second way is through Java Joy, which is our mobile coffee cart that goes into businesses and organizations serving coffee and transformative joy, and that employs adults with disabilities all around the country. And then the third way is our future vision, which is a camp called Camp Hooray, and it's going to be a universally designed camp built from the ground up so the kids in wheelchairs can sleep on the top bunk one day. Mm. That's our future vision. Our future journey is to raise funds, about $25 million, in order to build a universally designed, ultra-accessible camp.
That's a cool vision. I never thought about the top bunk.
Yeah.
So when you figure that out, I want to see that picture.
I've got it for you. I'll send it to you. You know, right. My favorite thing about going to camp when I was 8 years old was sleeping on the top bunk. And if you have a physical disability, you've never even had the option of sleeping on the top bunk. And so we're going to make that happen here in Athens, Georgia. We've got about 100 acres and a big strategic plan to make that happen one day. And I think kids from all over the country are going to come to experience it. So you'll have to come and bring your kids.
There we go. Well, as we talked about briefly, my daughter has a deep passion for this. So who knows? Maybe there is an opportunity to make that happen. All right, we're going to end with this. And I always preface this because it doesn't have to be the number one thing, because I hate questions like that. But if you could make a dream come true for your life, what would that be?
I think if I could make a dream come true, it would be to watch Java Joy go into every big city throughout the United States. Watching a 22-year-old with autism stand in Airbnb corporate in San Francisco yelling free hugs, y'all.
That's awesome.
And having a line of people who were awkward at first come back for second and third hugs was one of the most remarkable things I've ever experienced. And I think that we've dehumanized businesses and we've dehumanized our workplaces. And I think Java Joy is an example of how we can bring the human back into what we do every day. And so I think a dream come true would be watching that Airbnb experience happen across the country or maybe across the world would be one of the greatest joys I'll ever experience. And I think it'll happen one day.
When that happens, What do you think one of the downstream things of that would be to the United States or the world?
You know, it would mean that a mom who learns that her daughter has Down syndrome in utero would no longer have to fear if her daughter is going to be taken care of by her community one day when she passes before her daughter does. Or it would mean that people with disabilities would be elevated and given a chance to have the same opportunities that the rest of us have. And maybe even a step further, that they have the abilities and skills that some of us don't have.
That's right.
And I think that would be a remarkable day to see people without disabilities recognize their need for people with disabilities.
Well, with that final note, I am not going to say anything else because I think that is an amazing picture of what could be, as well as just the need for that. So I appreciate you sharing that. And I love the way you crystallize it with some real examples that frankly are not fun to listen to because it's painful. But yeah, everybody's got their own individual value and their own individual personality as well as their own calling in life. And it doesn't matter what limitations, because we all have them. It doesn't matter which limitations we have.
That's right.
Well, we really appreciate you sharing your insight, your knowledge, and your passion. I just hope that individuals who can get a glimpse of this, as well as in potentially come visit you, as well as maybe support you and your mission. So don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new investors find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Laura, thanks so much for your time, and I will definitely be staying in touch.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.